The Annex Wealth Management Show on 92.5 Fox News is hosted by Annex Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor. Important information about the qualifications and business practices of Annex is available at annexwealth.com. Different types of investments involve varying degrees of risk. Please consult with a qualified fiduciary advisor about your specific situation. Know the difference. Now, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 92.5 Fox News.
I'll quote Brian Jacobson. Is this a stumbling bull or an awakening bear? Welcome. It's Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. In the next hour, a great example of what we do on behalf of our clients. But it's just a glimpse. We're going to talk about financial and retirement planning for Generation X. Ask Annex is coming up and a whole lot more. I'm Danny Clayton. Dr. Brian Jacobson, the quote master, is our chief economist. Welcome.
It's great to be here.
Dave Spano, president and CEO, Annex Wealth Management. Welcome to you.
Yeah, thanks, Danny. Let's talk about that, Brian. Of course, a stumbling bull is really what we have at the moment because of a number of days in a row of losing on the market. And of course, Friday closed the same way. Mm-hmm. Even some of the tech stocks got really beaten down. But of course, the night before, Iran and Israel had another little dust up. So geopolitical risk is happening. Earnings season's getting ready, but there's a lot to talk about here today.
Yeah, there really is. It's investors have been reminded that investing does entail taking on risks, and our job is to try to figure out whether or not those risks are well compensated or not, because you can't really get away from the risks unless you want to, you know, cower in a corner. And if you want to grow wealth over time, it does involve exposing yourself to prudent risks, and that's really what we do. Most recently, a lot of the dust up in the market has been around between Iran and Israel, as far as what's going on there. Thankfully, it looks like that might be dissipating. That is not escalating. Let's hope that is indeed the case. Also, the Fed's narrative about maybe not needing to hike anytime soon.
And you see O'Neil Kashkara made news again this week saying we may not see it at all. The market certainly didn't like that.
That's right. Yeah. And he, you know, Neil Kashkari is one of those Fed officials that honestly I don't listen to a lot, mainly because he says the same thing again and again. But then again, a lot of them do. But also, he's not really representing the central tendency, the, you know, median voter of the FOMC. He's a bit of an outlier, and he has been out there saying maybe we don't need to actually cut this year. But he always hedges what he says because it's about if inflation doesn't come down, then we probably won't need to cut this year. Well, he's correct. If inflation doesn't resume its downward trajectory. So I think the market might be overreacting, putting too much weight on what he's been saying.
No, the market's overreacting.
That's
come
right.
On.
Yeah, they
come
never on, do that, do
but,
they?
But, you know, you talk about, you know, should they cut? Well, the rest of the world is certainly considering that. And if they do that and we don't, it will have an effect, for example, on the dollar.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that the market has been really beginning to price that in. The dollar has strengthened this year based on, I think, a lot of the expectation that the European Central Bank, the Bank of England, they are likely to start cutting rates this year. They're almost much more certain to cut than what the Federal Reserve is. And so when you do have that difference in direction of the central banks, when they start to go their own way, then you do see those currency moves. And that's really what's been reflected in the foreign exchange market.
Right. And of course, commodities as well. We see gold continuing to move up as well. And that's part of this conversation.
Yep.
But you talk about what's happening around the world. And of course, we can go to the other side of the pond completely and see what China is doing. And they are, of course, putting up big GDP numbers, but it might be fake news.
It might be. Yeah, you always have to take their GDP or any of their economic data with a grain of salt, probably, you know, salt around the rim of a margarita glass, just to really see whether or not there's any confidence in it. Because the GDP numbers, you know, they're targeting about 5% growth. And coincidentally, they posted 5.3% year-on-year growth. So magically, it was within target.
But let me just jump in and say part of that is because I think they're dumping some of their exports around the world, EVs and solars, for example. If they dump that, it looks like GDP, but if it doesn't get sold, it really shouldn't be booked.
Well, that's true. And also, in addition to that, they're building extra capacity. So that gets counted as investment spending. So it's not just the exports, the consumption, but that investment spending. Now, think back to the global financial crisis. They built, you know, these big cities that were not occupied, bridges to nowhere. But what they've been doing lately is increasing production capacity for electric vehicles and for the green economy. And that's one of the reasons why Treasury Secretary Yellen went over there to basically tell them that, you know, we see you doing this and we don't want you creating all this massive capacity and then eventually trying to dump those products on the rest of the world.
And not only EVs and solar, but certainly there was news out of the Biden administration talking about tariffs, which was really a Trump thing, but this came out of Biden's camp.
I know. Yeah, it is campaign season, right? As far as know your audience. That's one of the key things. And when President Biden was speaking in Pittsburgh, he had announced that he had intentions of placing additional tariffs on steel and aluminum from China. And that does seem like something out of former President Trump's playbook. But if it plays well in Pittsburgh, you know, you may as well sing the song.
Right, exactly. And of course, lastly, of earnings season, we are in full swing. Next week, there will be 150 of the S&P 500 companies reporting. That is a lot, but there's a lot of news coming out of that as well.
That's right. Yeah, 150 of them so far. We've only had about 13% of the companies report. Expectations coming in was to see earnings up about 3.4% year on year. So far, it's coming in relatively flat. It's still early days, but what we're seeing is a lot of divergences. You know, energy, it's expected that their earnings will be down pretty materially, but that's mainly because of what their earnings were last year. But
then you have comparison.
So it's always that year on year comparison that can kind of catch people off guards.
And of course, we're going to look at the individual names as they come across. A story that you and I were discussing before we went on the air is that Red Lobster is contemplating bankruptcy. And in fact, I think it looks like they're going to do that because of leases and labor costs, you know, restructuring Chapter 11, which really is, I'm interested in that because of the endless shrimp and teriyaki sauce.
Well, and also let's not forget those cheddar biscuits. Those things were delicious. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is kind of sad when you see these really... sort of almost legendary brands struggling like this, but they've struggled in the past before and have emerged from it. Now, thankfully, it seems like they're really planning a Chapter 11 bankruptcy, which means restructuring, as opposed to a Chapter 7, which would be, hey, let's liquidate things. So it's about getting out from under the burden of the high debt and all these leases.
So a lot of names we can discuss throughout next week, but of course, folks, you got to know what you own and why you own it. We say it all the time. And how much you're paying for it. That's part of the disclosure. That's part of being a fiduciary.
Dave Spano, President and CEO, Annex Wealth Management. Dr. Brian Jacobson, our Chief Economist. We've got them for the rest of the show. That's our Week in Review. It's powerful information. It's yours for free, and it's always available on demand at the top of the hour, wherever you get your podcasts, and in the Axiom newsletter. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, Sunday, April 21st. Still to come, financial and retirement planning for Generation X. We're going to be right back on 92.5 Fox News.
Market volatility, global issues, inflation, still more than a few headwinds this year. That's probably why Americans feel uncertain about their financial futures. Boomers, not much room for error. Gen X might need more than a 401k. And for millennials, it's time to get real about saving and investing. Talk to Annex Wealth Management. Build security with a partner on your side for unbiased advice. You may need more than investments. That's why Annex delivers tax and estate planning. There's an Annex plan personalized for you. Click the Get Started button at AnnexWealth.com.
We are back. Reminder, Annex Wealth Management SWAT podcast, a Monday morning look at what our investment team has identified as strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats for the upcoming week. By the way, it's going to be episode 100. That's a free download available wherever you get your podcasts. Last weekend, it was a last mad scramble to get your taxes done. Join us 1 week from today. We're going to talk about tax planning. We're not about the tax preparation as much. I mean, we help some of the clients with that, but planning is where it's at. So listen for a special segment on that. I'm Danny Clayton. Dr. Brian Jacobson, our Chief Economist, Annex Wealth Management is here. Dave Spano is our President and CEO.
Yeah, thanks, Danny. And of course, April showers bring May flowers. And the reason why I bring that up is because people's attitudes begin to change. And what happens is consumers go out and spend more. We saw some retail sales that came out, and it was affected a little bit about when Easter was in the calendar. But again, it's that time of year as well.
It really is. Yeah, a lot of people are going out there, maybe doing home improvement projects, doing the yard work, things like that. I know that, Danny, you perhaps have a few nicks and scratches from
this
doing a little...
Big thing on the top of my head. That's a tree branch.
That's right. Yeah, but people do like to spend a little bit more in April. We try to seasonally adjust these numbers to make it comparable across time, but consumers are spending more. One of the areas that I thought was kind of interesting, though, is that people are spending spending a lot more on gasoline. Mm-hmm. It was up more than 2%
and
month
going higher, prices of oil going up.
Yeah,
right?
and so that doesn't look to be going away. And it looked like people were beginning to almost eat into their discretionary spending. We know that over the last year, spending at food establishments and bars was up more than 6.5%, but it only rose 0.4% month on month in the most recent report. And so are people beginning to fill up their gas tank instead of filling up their bellies?
Yeah, that's funny. And of course, there's this thing called the Beige Book. It was kind of a bummer book, wasn't it?
It really was. Yeah, it's been really this kind of bummer of a read over the last few months, because it does look like manufacturing is continuing to struggle, maybe finding a little bit of a footing, but it is really a big hole they're trying to dig out of. And consumers, it noted, are beginning to pare back, becoming much more price sensitive, really shifting away from these discretionary items, things you don't have to have, more towards focusing on spending on things that are needs that you need to have, the non-discretionary component of spending.
And of course, you know, there's disruptions that happen that you just can't forecast. And you can really talk about either what's happening in the Red Sea or what happened in Baltimore.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, both of those, we would expect those to affect shipping, of course. And then the question is how big of an impact does that have on other activity? We know all the problems that happened during COVID when ports were shut down. Thankfully, it looks like manufacturers have been able to navigate around some of these shipping delays, but it is increasing their costs, not only as far as the amount of time that it takes and the fuel, but even insurance costs for a lot of that freight.
Dr. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economist, Annex Wealth Management. Dave Spano is our President and CEO. We got them for the rest of the hour. This show, Fiduciary Advice, Comprehensive Strategies, Empowering Education. That's how this company rolls, and that's how we are going to deal with you as a client. We'd love to talk to you about 2024 and beyond. If you're with somebody already, nothing wrong with a second look. It all starts by heading to the website at annexwealth.com, clicking that Get Started button. Still to come, financial retirement planning for Generation X, Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, 92.5 Fox News.
Inflation, market volatility, global unrest, a presidential election. You're not alone if you're feeling stressed about your investment and retirement planning. Take control with help from Annex Wealth Management. We'll build a plan that works for you, your family, and your investment and retirement goals. Annex offers financial planning at every level. Just starting out, there's Annex Ignite. If retirement is on the horizon, Annex Comprehensive Wealth is a great fit. If you've got high net worth and complex planning challenges, consider Annex Private Client. Know the difference with a fee-only fiduciary. AnnexWealth.com.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management, a fee-only fiduciary uniquely equipped to assist with a variety of clients from the greatest generation to millennials, and contained within those groups are Generation X, and that's what we're going to talk about. To do so, I'm joined by Kyle Svetlik, Wealth Manager at Annex Wealth Management. Hey, Kyle.
Hey, Danny.
So you're going to have to be an honorary Gen Xer, because I found out you're actually an old millennial. There is such a thing.
Doesn't that sound weird coming off your tongue? Old yeah. Millennial? That's where we're at today, but I am happy to fill the shoes and be an honorary Gen Xer today with you.
Most of Gen X is not on the doorstep of retirement, but they're definitely in the neighborhood. And that means increased focus, taking definitive steps. Many Gen Xers performing a balancing act. They've got careers. They've got kids. They've got aging parents, which means they're in the sandwich generation. They got college debt. It'd be natural, but it would be a mistake to put off investment and retirement planning.
I agree. And I think if you're sitting in that seat of being a Generation Xer, right now the check engine light's got to be on. If it's in your car, you can find reasons to ignore it, or you have something that comes up that's more important. You've got kids you got to take to school and you don't want to take it into the shop to get it fixed. Same thing goes for financial planning and retirement planning. And we found that this is more profound in Generation X than it is in millennials or baby boomers, and it's delaying, and there's consequences to that. So if you end up delaying your planning for retirement, you might find out that you're in a situation later in life that gives you financial strain, maybe a reduction of the lifestyle that you want to have, and it might make you more reliant on Social Security. Generation X isn't as trusting in the Social Security payments as maybe the baby boomers were. And that fact of being reliant on that income stream is going to probably cause a little angst, or you're going to have a punch to the stomach when you hear that.
Interesting to note that Gen X, they're going to be the first to reach retirement after the shift from defined benefit plans like pensions to 401ks. Kyle, at this point for Gen Xers, how important is it to like reassess risk or align a portfolio and plan? They're coming to Annex with a collection of investments, but probably a ton of overlap.
Yeah, and one of the things we do here at Annex, when you come aboard, we'll take a look at the allocations that you have in just not your IRA accounts, but in your 401k accounts. And you might think that because you're invested in a 2030 target date account, or you're invested in a large cap growth account, or you have an investment in a weighted S&P index, you have diversification. And that might be a misconception, because in all of those funds, you could have underlying assets that are the same sector or even the same companies to a high degree. So something we want to take a look at is, how well are you really allocated in these accounts? And we find that sometimes there is a lot of overlap. If you're in the tech sector, you've done well over the last year and a half, but that might not be where you need to be for the next 2, 3, 4, or 5 years down the road. So we want to take a look at that and make sure you're properly allocated into your funds.
We're with Kyle Svetlik, wealth manager at Annex Wealth Management, talking about Gen X and retirement. And I often read that Gen X, they feel the deck is stacked against them. They often wonder if they'll ever be able to retire. There was a retirement survey that revealed like 61% of Gen Xers aren't confident in their ability to achieve that dream retirement. That's a heavy load.
I would agree, a heavy load. And what's dream retirement? Is that sitting in Florida 6 months out of the year, or is that just making the ability to pay your bills so you can pay your bills on time and you have a stream of income coming in that's satisfied by your IRA accounts and Social Security, but maybe annuities that you have off to the sidelines? So what does that dream retirement look like? And when I was reading through that survey as well, it sounded like Gen Xers just want to get to the finish line. They just want to get to retirement, and their dream retirement's just making the ends meet to pay the bills, which in all opinions should not be how you plan and set up for retirement. It should be, how do I get to the finish line strong so that I can go and do the things I want to do in retirement? I want a vacation. I want to take the kids to Disney World. If you want to go to Disney World, you have to start saving today for those trips. And you want to make sure that you're able to bless your family with that.
If they've got ground to make up, catch-up contributions, that could make a huge difference, right?
Yeah, catch-up contributions are big. If you're 50 or older and you have an IRA and you can contribute into an IRA account based off of your income and where you're at with a 401k plan, you can put up an extra $1,000. Right now, under 50, it's $7,000 for an IRA. An extra $1,000 puts you up to $8,000 a year. And in your 401k, 403b, your employer plans, you actually can put up to $23,000 away in those. And then you have an additional catch-up, which is $7,500. So if you start putting away today, you could effectively almost put away $40,000 a year if you're trying to catch up into retirement. And if you have 10 years, 15 years out, that can really make a big dent in that concern that you're not going to be able to retire on time and really give you a prosperous retirement.
So we're singling out Gen X in this segment. I'm a boomer. I've got the same challenges. You might too, folks. Website annexwealth.com. Click that Get Started button. Kyle Svetlik, Wealth Manager, Annex Wealth Management. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Danny.
Good news, bad news. The good news, inflation today is nothing like it's been in the past few years. The bad news, lower inflation doesn't mean lower prices. In fact, one recent study says investors still consider inflation their single biggest threat. If you're concerned how inflation might affect your legacy, your financial freedom, or your confidence, meet with the team at Annex Wealth Management. We're fee-only fiduciaries. We'll build a plan together and guide you on the steps to take to reach the retirement you desire. Annex Wealth Management. Know the difference. AnnexWealth.com.
Time for Ask Annex, joined by Matt Morsey, Investment Team Manager, CFP. Welcome.
Hey.
Brad Coleman, CFP and a wealth manager. Welcome to you.
Hey, Danny.
Question one on Ask Annex. I'm recently divorced and my ex-spouse was always the breadwinner in our household. I'm planning to take half of his Social Security. My FRA is 67. I'd like to know, if I start collecting spousal Social Security benefits at 67 and also collect a government pension, would my Social Security benefits be affected by receiving a government pension?
Great question. Just a lot of moving parts here. So I'll start with the rules when it comes to getting your ex-spouse's Social Security. After a divorce, in order to collect your ex-spouse's Social Security, you must have been married for 10 years and you can't remarry. Also, you'll either get half of what your spouse's benefit is, or you'll get your full benefit. So if your benefit is less than half of your spouse's benefit, then you'll get your ex-spouse's benefit. Because you're collecting a government pension, there's also a thing called GPO. So that's government pension offset. What that means is you take your pension amount and 2/3 of that has to be subtracted from whatever half of his Social Security is. It could be reduced all the way to zero. So I recommend speaking with a wealth manager and then also a divorce specialist. We have CDFAs on our staff that can help you navigate this with a great plan.
That is really complicated.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right. Is that on the CFP exam?
It's on there. It's on there for sure.
Wow. Okay. Question two on Ask Annex. Is it meaningful to compare EPS across companies? EPS is earnings per share.
That's correct.
Okay. It seems like an unfair comparison because, all things being equal, a company with a smaller number of shares outstanding will report a greater EPS than a company with more shares outstanding.
Yeah, assuming they have the same amount of earnings, which two companies are generally not going to. Earnings per share, I think, is something to compare against a company's own history and where they're going in the future. Earnings per share is growing for a specific company over time. That's going to be a good sign. You know, as the question points out, though, if they are buying back shares, you know, and their share count is reducing, even if their earnings stay the same, their earnings per share will go higher. What I think is really useful exercise, you know, if you're going to try to compare companies against each other, is looking at price multiple off of that. So like PE, so price over earnings. So that way you're taking that earnings per share as the bottom part of that, and you can equalize that against other companies. So regardless of how many shares they have, you can compare two companies and what their PE ratio is against each other. Now, again, you're going to want to compare how that company is against itself in the past and where you think it's going forward. Are they in the same industry? Are they in the same subsector of that industry as well, too, that they could be comparable against each other? But looking at historical ranges is going to be really important. Looking at trends over time is going to be really important. So there's a lot to put into that. You know, especially the market is going to have an impact on what that price is for that share. And it's going to tell you something. And if a company has a higher PE, it's going to be more expensive. But there might be reasons why it's more expensive and the company's rewarding the growth of that company and rewarding what that future prospects look like. A lot to dig in there. But yeah, EPS by itself, it's hard to compare.
So it's earnings season, right?
Yeah.
Is that one of the numbers you'll look at first?
Oh, it's certainly up there. You know, when we're looking at one company, again, specific to itself, you're going to want to be looking at what have they done historically. But again, these comparisons are all made to what do you think is going to happen with the company, because you're not buying what the company did before. You're buying what you believe the company is going to do going forward.
It's Ask Annex. Got a question for us? You're always welcome. Head to the website, annexwealth.com. Don't have to be a client for that, by the way. We get back to everybody. Some of them wind up on the radio. If we can help, click that Get Started button. Question three, Ask Annex. Why is the 60-40 portfolio back in fashion? And Fred, just a quick explanation on what 60-40 is.
Sure. So 60% stocks, 40% bonds. It's usually looked at as the basic moderate portfolio. Depending on your risk tolerance, it can go either way. But looking forward, 2022 was a really painful year. And 2023 got better. But the main reason for that was because of the quick rise in interest rates. Historically, the 60-40 portfolio has done very well. And looking forward, for the first time in a long time, you're going to be able to get some type of yield off of your bond portfolio. For the longest time, interest rates were very low. Now you can get 4 or 5% of yield, which is really going to cushion the returns of that portfolio.
Yeah, it's important to remember that these things are going to go in trends. You know, there's going to be time periods where certain allocations or certain type of investments are going to be in favor, and other times where maybe they're going to underperform, and or maybe they have previously underperformed, but people want to throw them out. 60-40 does tend to be kind of that moderate investor's allocation over time. It is considered to be, you know, the most popular one that people talk about. It's not necessarily right for everybody. If somebody's going to be aggressive, they're certainly going to have a lot more equities in it. If they're conservative, they're going to want to have less. But they do need to make sure that there's that balance between the two. And stocks and bonds really are the two main building blocks of most portfolios. So that's why they get compared together. And you're right, Fred, you know, having yields back available within a portfolio getting 4 or 5+% is really, really attractive and does provide some investment return on the fixed income side of things. And the chance that at some point the Fed will cut, you'll get some capital appreciation on that as well, too, as bond prices go up when rates go down. So that's going to play off of each other. But it's something to watch over time and make sure that that's comfortable for your own risk tolerance. Not everybody's going to be a 60-40, but a lot are. From an age perspective, can you sleep at night when the stock market goes down? You know, are you going to worry about things? There's going to be areas of that that you're going to want to make your own changes to. But when we think about, is the 60-40 dead or is it back? That's really relative to where you are at that point in time.
That's Ask Annex. Matt Morsey, Investment Team Manager, CFP. Thanks.
Thank you.
Fred Coleman, CFP and a Wealth Manager. Thank you.
Thanks, Danny.
This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, 92.5 Fox News.
Market volatility, global issues, inflation, still more than a few headwinds this year. That's probably why Americans feel uncertain about their financial futures. Boomers, not much room for error. Gen X might need more than a 401k. And for millennials, it's time to get real about saving and investing. Talk to Annex Wealth Management. Build security with a partner on your side for unbiased advice. You may need more than investments. That's why Annex delivers tax and estate planning. There's an Annex plan personalized for you. Click the Get Started button at AnnexWealth.com. Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. Deanne Phillips, Director of Client Learning Development, CFP, CDFA, Wealth Manager at Annex. Welcome back.
Hi, Danny.
So buried in the middle of your certifications is CDFA, or Certified Divorce Financial Analyst. And sometimes when I introduce you, it breezes by pretty quickly. Purpose of this conversation is to dig a little bit deeper and explain what that is and how it can be an effective resource for clients of Annex Wealth Management.
Well, sure. So I've been a Certified Financial Planner, a CFP, for over 22 years. And about 7 years ago or so, I decided to focus on people undergoing potentially financially life-changing events. I mean, that retirement. Retirement's included in one of those, of course, but so is divorce. And the current certification for divorce is the CDFA.
A marriage is a partnership, and when that partnership ends, there needs to be a fair and equitable distribution of assets, and that can get sticky.
Well, sure, because no one really feels that their share is fair when all said and done.
We're going to make no bones about it. A divorce is a major event with significant impact. We're going to talk to the financial side. At Annex, our entire team is a resource for our clients, PhDs, CFAs, CFPs, wealth strategists, wealth managers, estate planning attorneys, long list. You are a wealth manager, a CFP, and a CDFA. What exactly is that?
Well, it's the credential for financial professionals who help people plan their divorces and also assist on the other side of divorces. The goal is to help clients understand the financial side of divorce. Now, while divorce involves many different areas of life planning, one of the most significant issues that couples have to navigate is how to split their assets. And a certified divorce financial analyst helps with that.
That sounds kind of legal. Does a CDFA help with legal issues?
Well, it's really critical to understand that a CDFA is not a law degree or a license. It does not authorize the holder to help couples with any of the legal issues that come up during divorce. This is particularly important because of how often legal and accounting issues overlap during divorce proceedings, like with child support calculations, for example. So again, the CDFA is there for the accounting issues. A CDFA works with the attorney, but does not replace the attorney.
You're a pretty busy person, but you said 7 years ago you added CDFA to your quiver. Mm-hmm. What's the process to get that?
Well, you know, okay, so the certification shows that the holder has studied and shown a special expertise in the financial and accounting field with issues that frequently occur while you're navigating and negotiating a divorce. The certification, again, is not a license or authorize the holder to help couples negotiate their divorce. It really indicates a significantly higher degree or skill or specialty in that field. It does require a basic 4-year bachelor education and then intense studies and exams.
I hate to say it, but the need is increasing. We're talking often about gray divorce. When a client is at the point where they need a CDFA, how do they utilize those services?
The role of the CDFA operates similarly to how the roles of attorney work at Annex. In both cases, we're not allowed to practice law because Annex is not a law firm. We're here as an educational resource in both cases. Relative to divorce, anyone can schedule a 30-minute session virtually or on the phone with myself as a CDFA here at Annex to answer questions about the divorce process in general and give clients or prospective clients a feel for what to expect in the process, education on different types of divorce, and based on their situation, some considerations. In all cases, we suggest one speak with an attorney. However, we're here to help people understand the financial aspect of divorce, including reading the marital settlement agreement, the quadro or qualified domestic relation order, and explaining those to the client and what their expectations are, understanding how pensions are split, assisting with the splitting of the assets after the divorce, as well as helping to sort out beneficiary designations, and even budgeting during and post divorce, and then, of course, things like support, child and spousal.
because the chips need to fall and we want to help where they're and how they're going to fall?
We do. So very often I will take a look at someone's in-process divorce, at their paperwork, and be able to answer questions. And then we can put it in our financial planning software and project how they will look on the other side of divorce. And in the long run, everyone wants to know, am I going to be okay coming out of this?
How often do you have to put that CDFA hat on?
Well, I would say it's much more now post-COVID. That really seemed to accelerate the cases that came our way, particularly with couples who are in that gray divorce area, so post 50 years old. And you know, when you're older and nearing retirement and looking at splitting your assets, everything that you built, basically it feels like you're starting over. It is a daunting task. We're here to help you sort that out.
Deanne Phillips, Director of Client Learning and Development, a CFP and a CDFA at Annex Wealth Management. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Inflation, market volatility, global unrest, a presidential election. There's a lot going on, which might lead to anxiety and planning paralysis. You're not alone if you're feeling stressed about your investment and retirement planning. How about this? Take control with help from Annex Wealth Management. Build a plan that works for you, your family, and your investment and retirement goals. Even better, Annex does it as a fee-only fiduciary with unbiased advice that includes tax and estate planning. Annex offers financial planning at every level. If you're just starting out, Annex Ignite might be for you. Annex Comprehensive Wealth is a great fit for most, especially with retirement on the horizon. And if you've got high net worth and complex planning challenges, consider Annex Private Client. Head to AnnexWealth.com and click the Get Started button. It only takes a few minutes to start the conversation, and you can set your own appointment at a time that works for you. It's time to put things in order and lower the stress and anxiety. Know the difference with a fee-only fiduciary. That's Annex Wealth Management. AnnexWealth.com. Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management? Well, this might be the shortest segment ever done on this show. I'm going to ask Amy Kiskala, an estate planning attorney and a wealth strategist at Annex Wealth Management, the following question. Do houses make for terrible wealth transfer vehicles?
Yes.
There you go. Segment's over. Thank you.
No problem, Danny.
No, we're not going to stop there. We're going to dig in a little deeper. Home may be where the heart is, but after it's inherited, it's where heirs must manage upkeep and deal with family conflicts related to what to do with it. What's a better way? And that's what we're going to explore. Used to be the American dream included not only buying a house, but passing that same house on to children. But what's the unspoken truth, Amy?
It is a bit of an over-exaggeration to say that it's a terrible wealth transfer vehicle, but transferring your home to your children does come with some challenges. You can be passing along financial burdens, red tape, home maintenance responsibilities, potential family conflict, and housing market volatility.
All of the above, right. A study from Money and Family found 68% of homeowners plan to leave a home or property to heirs, yet 56% haven't told them about their plans. That could be a problem.
It could be a problem on a number of fronts. So if the estate plan doesn't specify who inherits the house, then the children might have to decide if they're going to own it together, which can create some conflicts, or if one of the children is going to take it over. Whoever takes over the home will need a plan to pay those ongoing expenses. And these can be hard decisions to make after mom or dad is gone. So having that conversation while mom and dad are alive can be beneficial in determining whether any of the children would want the house and what the plan is to pay those homeowner expenses.
Right, because if your kids are spread out over the country, who's going to wind up with it?
Yeah, oftentimes parents assume that the kids want the house when the reality is they may be living all over the country.
Right. The question is, do houses make for terrible wealth transfer vehicles? Amy Kiskala is an estate planning attorney and wealth strategist. She said, yes, kind of. Let's talk about the financial burden.
As many of us are aware, there's a lot of expenses that go with owning a home. You've got home maintenance and improvements, utilities, property taxes, emergency repairs, insurance. Good idea for all the parties to know what those costs are. There can also be additional complications if there's a mortgage on the house. So let's say mom took out a mortgage at 3%. After mom dies, if you're inheriting the house, you're going to have to refinance that mortgage in your own name. And if you're doing that under today's rates, closer to 8%, those mortgage payments can be higher than you anticipated.
And what if the heirs want to sell the home? There's a lot involved with that. And let's say there's a couple of kids and they've got this hot potato now of a house. What I would hate, I guess I'm thinking of my situation, I'd hate for my boys to just unload the thing because they wanted to unload it.
Right. You want to be really thoughtful about that. And there can be a lot of steps to selling a house. So one of the first things you have to determine is, well, how is the house titled? And does somebody even have authority to sell the house? So if there's a probate involved, that might mean the executor, or could be the successor trustee if your house is owned by a trust. Often a good idea to use a realtor and an estate planning attorney to help guide the family through that process.
So we do this because owners often have a deep emotional attachment to their home. So when people gift their homes to children and heirs, they're not just given an asset, they're endowing them with all the good memories that were made on the property, but it can open up a can of worms. There are better ways to plan through what to do with a family home. What have you seen work?
I've seen this transition work well when parents do have those conversations and really go through that thought process ahead of time during their lifetimes and have a plan in place. So oftentimes it might make sense, you know, the kids may be spread across the country, but there may be one that's living locally that it does make sense for that child to take over the house. Then you want to make sure your estate plan is written to take that into account. So let's take an example. All right, so you've got two children, mom and dad have a house worth $500,000 and other assets worth $3.5 million. So if there is one kid that wants the house, then the estate plan could say that maybe that child gets the $500,000 house and $1.5 million of other assets, while the other child is going to get $2 million of other assets.
I guess it would be a conversation, because first you need to talk to the kids, right, and see what they might be interested in. But do you need to negotiate with your kids? That's a different question. So it's important to set that up before you talk to the estate planning attorney, but then to put the plan in place and say, okay, guys, here's how it's going to go.
Yeah, the estate planning attorney can walk you through what that process looks like. Sometimes you can set it up ahead of time. Sometimes you may not know. And so maybe your estate plan gives the children the option. Like, you may not negotiate with your kids, but maybe they negotiate with each other after your death to decide if one of them maybe wants to take over or buy the house from the other.
There's a reason, Amy, that you're on the team, Amy Kiskala, for stuff like this. She's an estate planning attorney, a wealth strategist at Annex Wealth Management. She and the rest of the bunch can help you. Amy, thanks for the time.
Thank you, Danny.
At Annex Wealth Management, we believe every portfolio tells a story. After all, we've analyzed thousands. Some reflect diligence and fortitude. Others, a mishmash of overlapping investments. When Annex reviews your portfolio, we spot what works, what might not, and then provide unbiased suggestions free from sales commissions. Every portfolio tells a story. Let's work on yours. Investment, retirement, tax, and estate planning. As a fee-only fiduciary, that's our story. Head to AnnexWealth.com.
Back on Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, 92.5 Fox News, joined by Robert Chastain, Branch Director, Wealth Manager at Annex Wealth Management, Southwest Florida. Hello.
Hi, Danny.
Well, I was a little worried that we might not have you on this segment because I didn't know how far you were going to go into the open.
Well, the pickleball tournament's been going on for a week now, and boy, it is really, really heavy crowds, great play. You can really tell. Pickleball itself is just really picking up steam, definitely here in Southwest.
Oh, it's so fun. And you know, I don't want to pump you up too much, but you're not a bad player. I mean, but there's some really good competition.
I'm average to better than average. That's all I'll say.
There you go. Back on topic, folks. We're going to talk about legacy planning for clients of Annex Wealth Management. It's what we do. And to do it right, it takes care, it takes precision, and it takes communication. And we're going to talk about adult children initiating the conversation with their aging parents about long-term care, the estate plan, other financial matters. And Robert, this can be an awkward conversation.
You know what, Danny? It really can be, but it really comes down to, has your family been open and communicative about finances, money, your whole lives? Or is this really the first conversation? Even though it's the children that kind of clean up after the parents successfully end retirement, I would really beg the parents out there, if you haven't had these conversations, approach your children, because you don't want to leave them not carrying out your wishes. Start that conversation.
Yeah, I realize the importance, but I went through this with my dad, and I think a lot of this is probably the greatest generation that we're talking about, really. The boomers talk a little bit more, but the greatest generation kept a lot of things to themselves. And when I kind of broached it with my dad, I felt weird about it, because I didn't want to feel like a vulture, but I also knew that he would want it in place, but it was just kind of a touchy subject. Human nature kind of makes us avoid these conversations, and there's a downside to that.
Well, it really is, Danny, and you just said a touchy subject. I you know what? Can we talk about politics or religion?
Yeah.
I mean, do we have to talk about money? Sometimes they'll feel it's an invasion of their privacy, like you said, oh, you know, you're being a vulture, you must must need money, or they might be embarrassed because they don't have anything in place. Or it could be a combination of all those, or even something else we haven't mentioned. But the sooner that you talk about it, and I would almost say bring everyone together. It's non-threatening. It's just like, hey, mom, dad, what do you really want? What have you done? What do we need to do? And try and get that on paper before anything happens. None of us know, Danny, when the hourglass runs out.
Yeah. But, you know, here's the thing. If you don't do this, it's going to lead to a downstream mess. Estate distribution could be too much. One kid receives too much or not enough. One kid might be the more responsible one. They might bear the burden. It's a sticky situation. Robert Chastain is our branch director and wealth manager at Annex Wealth Management in Southwest Florida. So we're talking about legacy planning that involves adult children. How about a neutral third party? And that might be somebody like Annex Wealth Management.
It is very possible, and it's almost needed if your children don't get along or somebody's out of graces and they're contesting everything. If you have that neutral party involved, there's no biases. You're just, okay, what's fair? This goes here. This maybe could go there. And it's just a neutral party to help navigate those waters and the issues. I've been doing this for over 20 years now. I've been through enough of them now, and I've seen some pitfalls. I've seen some of the failures, and the rest of the team here at Annex, we can help you avoid the potholes. They're painful at this time. If one of your parents are gone, it's too late. They can't sign something. Yeah. They can't change something. It's permanent.
It might be nice where if somebody from Annex Wealth Management could actually ask the elder parent, hey, listen, how would you like this conversation to go? And we take it from there.
Absolutely. Typically, if the parents are a client, we will know what their wishes are. You know, we're always asking our clients, what are your thoughts? What are your wishes? And we know a fair amount about their children, grandchildren, where they're thinking that they want their assets to go, what they want to do with them. And then when we bring the whole family together, which we really like to do, we like to bring the kids in and everybody sit at the table together. We've all had this conversation amongst a group, and then we can go execute it.
Yeah, and it's a sooner than later thing, right?
None of us know when the sand runs through the hourglass. So the sooner you get it out and at least get the conversation started, you can get your estate plan in place, your wills, your trusts, etc. You know what? You'll feel better about it. Okay, that's one more thing I've clicked off. Go enjoy your retirement.
Amen, brother. Robert Chastain, Wealth Manager, Branch Director, Annex Wealth Management, Southwest Florida. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Danny. And when are we going to get you here on a pickleball court?
Yeah, the knees. The knees won't do it.
All right. All right.
All right. Thanks. We are going to take a break, and we're going to be back, and we're actually going to talk about the roles within estate planning. You know, kind of dovetail with what Robert and I just talked about. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, 92.5 Fox News.
Market volatility, global issues, inflation, still more than a few headwinds this year. That's probably why Americans feel uncertain about their financial futures. Boomers, not much room for error. Gen X might need more than a 401k. And for millennials, it's time to get real about saving and investing. Talk to Annex Wealth Management. Build security with a partner on your side for unbiased advice. You may need more than investments. That's why Annex delivers tax and estate planning. There's an Annex plan personalized for you. Click the Get Started button at AnnexWealth.com. Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management? Alec Durand is an estate planning attorney at Annex Wealth Management. Hello, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Estate planning can be complex, but it's got to be done correctly to avoid a ton of trouble, hurt feelings, potential deeper legal issues long after a loved one has passed. And we got to point out, the loved one would never have wanted to have that kind of trouble.
Oh, absolutely.
A fiduciary is somebody who operates in the best interest of a client, or in the case of an estate, the best interest of the estate and that person's wishes. But things can go sideways quickly. It isn't as simple as selecting his or her spouse, followed by his or her children. An estate might be too complex, or there are family dynamics that really need to be addressed. And this needs to be done prior to having the estate plan activated when somebody passes. Am I right there?
You are. And the best practice there is to consider who you want to be responsible for making decisions in the event you're unable to do so, or in the event that you pass away. And while it's not always easy to think in the long term, keeping an eye on potential conflicts and selecting a person capable of managing that is important.
It's in the rearview mirror now, but did COVID change much about estate planning?
I think that COVID put estate planning more at the forefront of people's minds and really got people thinking about who they want to be in charge of their estate and maybe who should be in charge of making decisions for them in case they're not able to do so. But I don't know that it really changed the necessities of a solid estate plan.
Let's go through the roles seen in estate planning. Let's talk about the FPOA. Is that the official name, the financial power of attorney?
That's the common name. The name that you'll see on a lot of the documents sometimes is called the durable power of attorney, okay, or a DPOA. All the same thing, financial power of attorney, durable power of attorney. It all governs the same thing. And that's a document where a person nominates someone to make decisions for them if they're not able to do so for financial purposes. And not just finances. Really, it's anything regarding finances and contracts.
And this is in place only when the person is alive.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's only effective for as long as a person is alive, and it doesn't do anything to distribute your property or your assets. It's only nominating someone to make decisions for you if you're not able to do so.
Healthcare power of attorney. Is there a new name for that?
No, okay. That's the same thing. The healthcare power of attorney, or HPOA, very similar to the financial power of attorney. It's a document where you're nominating someone to make healthcare decisions for you if you're ever unable to do so for yourself. Same thing as that financial power of attorney. It's only effective so long as you're alive. It doesn't do anything to address passing assets on your death.
I think the answer is it depends, but is sometimes the durable power of attorney and the healthcare power of attorney the same person?
It absolutely can be, but that goes back to what we were talking about at the very beginning of this topic, where you got to pick someone that meets the role. So someone that is good with finances isn't always the best person to make a healthcare decision for you. So that's something you got to be considering when you're setting up these documents.
Yeah, like in the case of my dad, my sister is a nurse. She was a healthcare. And
right.
I did financial.
Yeah, exactly. That's a perfect example.
Okay. Personal representative or executor, is that the same thing?
Those terms are interchangeable, okay, and they are the person in charge of the estate of someone. And so that's a person nominated under a last will and testament. So if you have a will-based estate plan or even no estate plan, you would be subject to potentially probate. Probate's required if a person passes away with $50,000 or more in their individual name at the time of their death. And the personal representative is the person in charge of the estate of that person, which means gathering up assets, paying off debts and expenses, and then making sure everything is distributed in accordance with someone's will, or if no will, in accordance with applicable state law.
Is that compensated?
It can be.
How about the trustee? Now, this is when we're getting a little bit more complex in estate planning, isn't it?
Yeah. Right. So not everyone has a trust-based estate plan, but for those that do, the trustee is very similar to the personal representative, except instead of being responsible for an estate, they are responsible for administering a trust. They are a fiduciary, just like a personal representative, very similar roles, you know, gathering up assets, paying off any outstanding debts and expenses, and then making sure that trust assets are distributed both in accordance with the terms of the trust and then to the best extent possible in accordance with the wishes of the person that set up that trust document.
We're with Alec Duran, estate planning attorney at Annex Wealth Management. So we got the rules. Let's talk a little bit about the process. Does a good estate planning process need everybody in the room? Who needs to be in the room at the start?
The only people that really need to be there are you and your attorney, your estate planning attorney. Anything beyond that is a personal choice. There's something to be said where too many chefs in the kitchen. If you have too many people, it can lead to too much complexity, too many questions going on. So there's something to be said for keeping it simple. That said, it's generally a good idea when you have your estate plan set up to at least talk to the persons that you named in fiduciary roles, let them know that you did name them and what that role entails.
So it's not a, oh, by the way.
Right, exactly. Right. You want them to know what's going on or what will happen.
And you touched on it before, but because somebody's the eldest in the family, it doesn't mean that they should be the default choice for any of these roles. They could be miscast.
Absolutely. And legally, you have no obligation to name a family member in any of these roles. Sometimes, because of family dynamics or other outside considerations, maybe the family members aren't the best choice to name in these roles. So that's something you got to be considering. You know, who's going to be making solid financial choices for you or healthcare decisions for you as applicable?
Alec Durand is an estate planning attorney at Annex Wealth Management, works on behalf of our clients, can do the same thing for you. Start at annexwealth.com. Alec, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We're going to take a quick break, but we're going to be back on Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, 92.5 Fox News.
Inflation, market volatility, global unrest, a presidential election, there's a lot going on, which might lead to anxiety and planning paralysis. You're not alone if you're feeling stressed about your investment and retirement planning. How about this? Take control with help from Annex Wealth Management. Build a plan that works for you, your family, and your investment and retirement goals. Even better, Annex does it as a fee-only fiduciary with unbiased advice that includes tax and estate planning. Annex offers financial planning at every level. If you're just starting out, Annex Ignite might be for you. Annex Comprehensive Wealth is a great fit for most, especially with retirement on the horizon. And if you've got high net worth and complex planning challenges, consider Annex Private Client. Head to annexwealth.com and click the Get Started button. It only takes a few minutes to start the conversation, and you can set your own appointment at a time that works for you. It's time to put things in order and lower the stress and anxiety. Know the difference with a fee-only fiduciary. That's Annex Wealth Management. annexwealth.com.
We're back. Financial planning at every level. Annex Comprehensive Wealth, Annex Private Client, Annex Ignite. We're going to meet you where you're at. If you'd like to hear a podcast version of this show, it's going to be live at the top of the hour, wherever you get your podcasts. On the show today, Dr. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economist at Annex Wealth Management. Dave Spano is our President and CEO.
Thanks, Danny. You know, Brian, we talk about asset allocation a lot, and it doesn't really matter if you have $50,000 or $5 billion. Mm-hmm. Asset allocation is a real thing. Yep. And we do that for our clients all the way from startup to comprehensive wealth management all the way to private client. But we took a look at some pension funds over the past week, and we see them starting to change some of their asset allocation, and we found it interesting.
Yeah, really, when you look at the pension universe, it's really interesting as far as what is their objective. It can be a little different than the objective of individual investors. So if you think about those classic defined benefit plans where the employer was socking away money to pay out employees some sort of deferred compensation or annuity over time, they wanted to try to fund those. And the massive increase that we've seen in the equity markets has actually made that a little bit easier for them to fund it. Also, this increase in interest rates has made it easier to fund those. So a lot of these private and public sector pension plans are doing a lot better. And as a result, they have been actually taking a little bit of money off of the table because they don't
On the equity side.
On the equity side, right. Especially.
So, but I want to make sure. I mean, the money stays in the washing machine. It's just
it getting, does.
You
yep.
know, fleece just gets getting reallocated. Thrown around, right? Yeah. Yep. So they are taking some money off of the equities because they had a 10% movement in the first quarter, which was a good year, and yeah. They're starting to shift that.
That's right. So of the $9 trillion that are in pension plans, it's estimated that maybe they're going to make about a 5 percentage point move out of equities more into higher yielding fixed income. And one of the questions that we get from a lot of clients is, you know, if I am making 5 to 5.5% on my money market fund, why would I want to own equities? Well, you know, you just have to kind of look back at what happened with equities over the last year, where you're up more than 20%, right? So it is more risk, but the higher yield on cash does create almost like a higher hurdle rate for investors to kind of think about when coming to the point of deciding how much risk do they really want to take on. Maybe they can dial it back a little bit now that yields are as high as what they are.
And, you know, they're moving these dials around. And, of course, the quarter that we just ended here at the beginning of the year in 2024 was the best quarter we've seen since the first quarter of 2019. So this is an opportunity to rebalance, if you will, no different than what Mrs. Kuskovevitz is going to do, right, in her portfolio. Yep. But make those moves right now. But they do have something that she may not have in their portfolio, and that's private equity and private debt.
That's correct, yeah. So when you do look at higher net worth individuals and these pension plans, they do have a slightly bigger toolbox, right? You do need to be, say, accredited or qualified in order to invest in certain less liquid securities. And that's actually what a number of pension plans have been doing, is looking at private credit. So instead of the, if you think about a traditional mutual fund that invests in bonds, they're looking at more private private structures that sometimes can go to a much bigger pool of people that they're lending money to. So the yields there can be higher, but it is almost a slightly more exclusive club in order to be investing in that. So for a lot of our higher net worth clients, we do work with them as far as determining whether or not private equity, private real estate, or private credit, or even private infrastructure, are those going to be appropriate? Will they it help them achieve their financial goals or not?
And let's go through just a real basic example of the vehicles that people can use. Of course, everyone knows about mutual funds,
yep.
But there's an institutional style mutual fund which pays a lower cost. But there is this, obviously what's happened over the last couple of decades is exchange traded funds, really all the way down to sectors or countries. They can really get specific, and then individual stocks and bonds. And of course, when you talk about bonds, there's really a couple levers you can pull. So all of this really means going through this portfolio.
It does. And then when we're looking at the private markets, it's a slightly different structure there where it might actually be a partnership. So it's not necessarily something that you just can, you know, log into your account and invest in. It's actually you oftentimes structured as a limited partnership, a lot more paperwork involved. And it's also requires a lot more due diligence. And by due diligence, we just mean that it's really that footwork that you do to understand what's in there. And then also, what are all the fees? Because sometimes the fees can be quite a bit higher than what you see in exchange-traded funds and mutual funds.
I just want to end up on one thing that you said last week, and I used it actually this week, is that humility goes along with investing. If you don't have it, you certainly can get your hat handed to you.
Dr. Brian Jacobson is our chief economist at Annex Wealth Management. What's the chance of you hearing any of the Taylor Swift album this weekend?
You know, I might actually try to listen to it because I'm sure my son is going to ask me. Not that he's a fan. He's a classical music
right.
fan, but I'm sure he's hearing it at school.
And then, Dave, you got a daughter, but you love music in general.
No chance. No, not listening to it, no.
Why did I know that? All right. And I know three Taylor Swift songs, but boy, do I respect her business acumen. Hey, folks, our show is only an hour, but we do our best to showcase a sample of what we do on behalf of our clients. Hey, ask your friends, ask your neighbors who are clients. We want you to know the difference because, ladies and gentlemen, there is a difference. Only takes a couple of minutes to start the conversation. AnnexWealth.com. Click that Get Started button. Thanks for listening. See you next Sunday at noon on Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, 92.5 Fox News.
The Annex Wealth Management Show is hosted by Annex Wealth Management, a fee-only registered investment advisor. Important information about the qualifications and business practices of Annex is available at AnnexWealth.com. Different types of investments involve varying degrees of risk. Please consult with a qualified fiduciary advisor about your specific situation.